You're listening to SBS News.
Having a community can be a great source of comfort and strength. But sometimes the search for a sense of belonging can take a turn down some dark and extreme paths. In this episode of To the Extreme, the question of why people join extremist movements and why they leave.
When Vidya Ramalingam set out on a mission to speak to white nationalists, she had many concerns.
I just started to turn up to white nationalist rallies, and I would stand in the back, and at first I was just observing, then I would work up the courage to get a little bit closer, and then slowly but surely I worked up the courage to actually start asking people questions.
The daughter of Indian immigrants to the United States, she had been trained as an anthropologist, doing fieldwork and conducting semi-structured interviews. But none of that technical training could have prepared her for this sort of complex work with this kind of racial dynamic.
As a woman of colour, starting conversations with people in a white nationalist movement, there is an inherent power dynamic there, there's an inherent struggle there, that in speaking to individuals, you're already breaking through a number of barriers.
Until she attended rallies, Ms. Ramalingam had been spending time around like-minded people in anti-racist activist groups. But she soon found that wasn't enough.
For me, the push moment to go speak to someone on the other side was really this realization that, you know, anti-racist movements were so good at bringing together people who already believe in the cause, but actually had such a tough time actually converting people who were on the other side of the aisle who didn't believe in the cause or who were the root of the problem.
Sulin Quek from the Centre for Multicultural Youth in Victoria gave evidence to the state's parliamentary inquiry into extremism. She says with Australia becoming increasingly multicultural, it's important to address the risks of these communities being targeted. She told the inquiry strategies need to go further and adopt an inclusive approach for all.
What I started to see in COVID, in terms of some of the young people's conversation, is that young people saying to me, their classmates or their friends are saying, how come all the money is being poured into multicultural families? What about us? What about me? My family's struggling, and rightly so. A lot of families were living in poverty as well. So it's not about the skin colour. It's about how do we think about community and how do we think about social cohesion that speaks to everyone and not just a subset of the community.
When Ms. Ramalingam started attending the white nationalist rallies, some people were hostile and wouldn't look her in the eye. But that later changed.
If I just was asking them questions to try and get to know them, to try and understand why they were there, what brought them out today, what their motivation was, I found that actually more often than not, they were open to conversation. And I think in particular, they were confused and were questioning why someone like me was there and why someone like me was talking to them. And I think in some ways that confusion opened up doors. I found at some point that they started asking me questions about why I was there, and then all of a sudden the barriers started to break down.
So what leads someone to join an extremist movement in the first place? Deborah Smith is a research professor in violent political extremism, social conflict and social change at Victoria University.
We tend to focus on the violent act. We tend to focus on the things that are really visible. When people actually commit to doing violence or are out on the street protesting. But we actually would benefit sometimes from taking a step back and understanding that there's a broader context.
She says many are searching for a sense of purpose.
It's about who I feel comfortable with, who I see as my enemies, who I relate to, who I'm repelled by. These are really emotional concepts. And sitting alongside that is that there's always a set of beliefs that people are buying into.
That set of beliefs can be referred to as an ideology.
If you think about your football team, especially if it's not doing well, there's a whole bunch of really good arguments about why you shouldn't barrack for that footy team. But you do. You barrack for it because it's usually beyond the argument, and it's part of, you know, who you see yourself as. It's got all these emotional components, and you know, it's full of believing about what might be in the future. And it's similar what's going on for people when they buy into a violent extremist ideology.
Professor Smith says violent extremists tend to develop alternative moral frameworks.
A lot of that is an emotional construct. So if you can create a system where you believe that violence is justified, then there's a whole lot of other things that have gone on for you in rejecting the existing legal system, seeing the existing system as beyond, you know, redemption, therefore, you know, validating your use of violence.
Sue Lynn Quick told the inquiry most young people who become extremists are disenchanted with their lives.
And the majority of extremists or people who've been radicalised into extremism, whether it's about Islamists or whether it's about white supremacy, what the research has told us, those young people have little real or deep knowledge of the religious or political doctrines that they are supporting. But they get drawn into it because a lot of young people, as we know, and some of what we're hearing back from communities as well, is that they're highly disengaged.
She says they're often trying to grapple with many aspects of adolescence.
Social isolation, family breakdowns, mental health issues in a context of adolescent development. And we think about adolescent development where we know through research and what the science has told us is the brain is still developing. And the brain development goes right up to, for young men, it goes right up to at least early 20s. So the brain is still developing in the context of young people trying to also form a sense of identity, who they are, find that sense of belonging and finding that sense of connection.
Professor Deborah Smith says while they might initially fulfil a sense of purpose, many end up exiting the movement.
Most people will leave voluntarily. Without any help or nudging, they will remove themselves from the situation. The issue for us is to how to, you know, prevent people getting involved, not only because getting involved can harm other people, but it's also harmful to them. And also if they are involved, finding ways for them out. So there's ways of exiting because generally they're not really great places to be.
The COVID-19 pandemic has allowed for the expansion of extreme right-wing narratives in Australia. Professor Smith says online connections and social media can strengthen relationships, perceived or otherwise, in the outside world. She refers to the Christchurch mosque attacker.
Who's, you know, clearly acted alone. He's not been alone. He's acted alone, but he's also belonged to broader groups. He's been connected through social media to, you know, white power movements in Australia and around the world. And so social media helps you to create and sustain those connections.
So if we can understand some of the motivations for what reels people into these movements, what is it that pulls them out? It's been almost a decade since Vidya Ramalingam first attended white nationalist rallies in Europe. And this is what she's learned.
You know, it started to strike me, well, you know, if it's relationships that get people in and if it's that feeling of belonging that gets people into the movement, surely we can use that for good to try and turn people's lives around and get them out.
She's since launched her own organisation, Moonshot, and works to harness social media to prevent violent extremism.
The impetus to set that up was, you know, well, if we know human relationships can get people out of these movements, how can we harness the power of the internet to actually facilitate those sorts of connections, those sorts of relationships to actually pull people out rather than, you know, what we typically see the internet as, which is this kind of, you know, vortex of, you know, pulling us all down into a dark place online.
Multicultural Youth Victoria's Sue Lynn Quick told the inquiry working on the ground with young people is critical.
Organisations like us, which are youth work driven, we are the bridge. We are the coalface. How do we bring back that very good youth work that can work with, you know, a third generation Anglo-Australian families who are living in Gippsland and are struggling economically, as well as a South Sudanese family who's just recently moved into Gippsland as well and are struggling as well. So it's how do we bring back that glue into local communities that doesn't stereotype them into who they are?
And Professor Deborah Smith is currently collaborating with law agencies to develop prevention strategies.
So we should have a policing and law enforcement response for the violence component for the people who are stepping over the criminal threshold. But we also, I think, need to be better at having, you know, these broader all of government style responses around people who are just being generally hateful online, who are committing acts that are very threatening and feel very violent to the people who are targeted by them, but that don't necessarily meet the threshold where the police could lay terrorism charges.
Suleen Quek told the inquiry, when it comes to developing policy, how we talk about things can sometimes inflame things rather than help.
We're hearing anecdotally that there is a rise in racism as young people go back into schools and have face-to-face time in classrooms. We're hearing racism in sporting clubs on the ground as well. And it's not just us who are saying it. I'm hearing it from other people outside CMOI. And I don't know whether it's because in the last 2 years we have lost our social skills. And it's not just verbal, it's aggressive behaviours that's coming up. I think sometimes, you know, whether someone rightly believes it or not, just skin colour becomes a scapegoat for a number of different frustrations that people feel.
Deborah Smith says leaders have a responsibility to be mindful of the language they use.
By far, the biggest entry point into the far right is through Islamophobia or an anti-Islam rhetoric. Largely because this can be done so easily in the public space, because it's just mainstreamed to the point where we're not even shocked about people being Islamophobic or saying really awful things about Muslims. I mean, indeed, we've had our parliamentarians using this same sort of language that is used in these forums.
In Washington, D.C., in the United States, Vidya Ramalingam remains optimistic about what's possible.
And what we found over the years in our various tests in different parts of the world, including in Australia, is time and time again, we find that the internet is an effective way of reaching out to individuals who are in a dark place, who might be vulnerable and might be taking a violent path, and to try and connect them in with social workers, with you know, behavioral health specialists, with counselors, with people who have the skills to have a conversation with someone who might be vulnerable to violence and to try and change their paths.
And she says there is help available for those who need it.
I would encourage people to look for help online, because they will now, as of 2022, be able to find more resources on how to exit or how to support a loved one than they ever would have been able to find in the past. But I would really, my call to the Australian government here would really be to invest in building up those resources and also making them much more available online for audiences who are deeply in need.
To report any suspicious or suspected terrorist activity, contact the National Security Hotline on 1800 123 400 or 000 in an emergency. That was Hannah Kwon. I'm Stephanie Corsetti, and this is To the Extreme, a production of SBS News. For more episodes, go to sbs.com.au/news. You can also listen to this series and more on SBS News in depth on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.